VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
And thank you for joining us today here on Crosstalk for a news roundup day. And friends, we've got a ton of stories we need to share with you, a ton of issues that are going on. We're going to do our best to cover as much material as possible. And as I'm going through stories today, it's like this is almost like an addendum to What in the World from yesterday, because there are so many things that are happening that really are head scratchers as to some of the matters that are taking place. And friends, again, the topics are not designed here to cause fright or fear. If anything, it ought to burden our hearts for the lost here across this nation. As I see all of this coming to pass, we are drawing near to the time of the Lord's return. We ought to occupy until he comes, to go about doing the Lord's business until he comes again, to be light, to be salt in this time and age in which we live. It's no accident you're here for such a time as this. So let me delve into these stories here today, and I trust that these matters burden our hearts more, and prayer for our nation, prayer for our leaders, whether there's an R or a D behind their name, prayer for the situations taking place across the nation and around the world as well. We're going to begin with a interesting press release that came forth yesterday from Liberty Council. Yes, another historic peace agreement. President Trump announced that his administration helped secure a peace and normalization agreement between Israel and Morocco. President Trump spoke with the King of Morocco, and they issued a proclamation recognizing the U.S. support for Morocco's autonomy over the Western Sahara territory. He congratulated the two countries in a tweet saying, "Another historic breakthrough today. Our two great friends, Israel and the Kingdom of Morocco, have agreed to full diplomatic relations, a massive breakthrough for peace in the Middle East." How many peace agreements have there been so far? And folks, more in the making, we understand, as well. Really should be a wake-up call for us, should it not? Let's go on to some other news. This is from Newsmax.com. In a new show of military might, two American bomber aircraft took off from the U.S. and flew over a swath of the Middle East yesterday, sending what U.S. officials said was a direct message of deterrence to Iran. The flight of the two massive B-52H Stratofortress bombers over the region was designed to underscore America's continuing commitment to the Middle East, even as President Trump's administration withdraws thousands of troops from Iraq and Afghanistan. The long-range heavy bombers, capable of carrying both conventional and nuclear weapons, are a rather formidable sight. From townhall.com, Rashida Tlaib, Congresswoman, raised eyebrows Sunday after she retweeted a message with a phrase that's associated with calling for an end to the state of Israel. This is unbelievable. This is another one of those what-in-the-world kind of statements, but Rashida Tlaib's RTs sent out this, tweeted this, "From the river to the sea, Palestine will be free." And the folks, that's code for eradicating the state of Israel and its millions of Jews. This is from a sitting U.S. congresswoman. Again, "From the river to the sea, Palestine will be free." In other words, push Israel off the face of this earth, right into the sea. According to the Jewish Journal, the phrase "from the river to the sea" has always, always been associated with annihilation of the state of Israel, not liberation. This coming from a congresswoman in our United States Congress. The Epoch Times reporting that the Director of National Intelligence, John Ratcliffe, Sunday said the Chinese Communist Party is using gene editing to boost its military. He noted that if the Communist Party of China supersedes the U.S. to become the world superpower, it would imperil individual liberties, freedoms around the world, adding that free enterprise is all at stake. Also, we have here from Gatestone Institute, China's Communist Party seems to be implementing a multidimensional strategy in the Caribbean, reaping economic, political, and potentially military gains a few miles offshore from the United States. China's ultimate objective of the Caribbean strategy may well be to confront the U.S. not only with its presence near the mainland U.S., but also with a situation analogous to America's military presence in the region of the South China Sea. Chinese shipments of military and police equipment to several Caribbean states could be developing into beachheads for future People's Liberation Army advisory groups in the Western Hemisphere. Additionally, China has been investing considerable revenue into the economies of the hemisphere's anti-American Caribbean socialist states of Cuba and Venezuela. China's dominant role as a world leader in the production of pharmaceuticals and medical devices is as presumably intended, enabling the Chinese to garner considerable goodwill in the region. China's already delivered 30,000 virus test kits to Jamaica, at least 100,000 protective masks to Cuba, as well as about 100 ventilators to the Dominican Republic. And Gatestone Institute that reports that Chinese military is implementing this multidimensional strategy right in the Caribbean. Jihad Watch telling us that Admiral Greg Fowler, the head of the U.S. Southern Command, warns about the alarming and concerning arrival of military personnel from the elite Quds force of Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, notorious for its terrorist activities in other countries, including Syria and Iraq, confirming that the military is seeing an uptick in weapon shipments from Iran to Venezuela. The Iranian proxy Hezbollah has already been describing as having a sanctuary in Venezuela, which clearly possess a real threat not only to the Latin American region, but also to American national security. Folks, there is much taking place around the world, and you need to be aware of what is taking place. Are you praying for this nation? Here's another issue. Joe Biden is pledging to usher in a new era of LGBT rights. Joe Biden has said that he is committed to building the most pro-equality administration in history. He gave remarks to the LGBTQ plus leaders last Friday, about a 2-minute speech to the International LGBTQ Leaders Conference. And this is from them.us. This is not a family-friendly publication. But they report this 2-minute speech to the International LGBTQ Leaders Conference that Biden paid tribute to the historic gains in queer and trans political representation seen in 2020. Here are his comments.
Hello, everyone. It's wonderful to join this year's International LGBTQ Leaders Conference. To Mayor Anise Parker and everyone at the Victory Institute, thank you, thank you, thank you for your leadership and your bravery. For your belief in possibilities. A historic number of LGBTQ people ran for office this year, and they won, many of them. It's an honor to be an ally and have been on the ballot with all of you. Vice President-elect Harris and I are committed to being the most pro-equality administration in history. But we can't do it without you. And we can't do it without my dear friend, Nancy Pelosi. Nancy, congratulations on receiving the Victory Institute's History Maker Award. You deserve it. 3 decades in Congress, always on the right side of LGBTQ history, always. And the fact that you can receive a History Maker Award for that and so much more is testament to your character, Nancy. It's a testament to the life's work to make real the promise of this country that you've been devoted to. That we're all created equal and deserve to be treated equally and with dignity and respect. You're a dear, dear friend, Nancy. You really are. You're an American treasure. I can't wait to work together again with you to continue to fight for full equality and to usher in a new era of LGBTQ rights and the entire movement. God bless you, Nancy. You deserve this and so much more. And God bless us all.
God bless us all. Even though we defy his words, even though we totally go against what he has declared in his word, even though he has denounced the sin of homosexuality, we're asking for his blessing. He gave this speech at the International, before them, video message to the International LGBTQ Leaders Conference. He had a hard time with the letters. I guess I am, too. And he said, I can't wait to work together again with you to continue to fight for full equality. And listen to this. Did you catch the words? And usher in a new era of LGBTQ rights and the entire movement. Now, friends, no matter how great you believe the onslaught is now of the lesbian, homosexual, bisexual, transgender, queer movement, no matter how much you see that onslaught right now, you ain't seen nothing yet. You heard him commend Nancy Pelosi. And Nancy Pelosi has talked about her support behind Biden's plan that he talked about just recently here again, support of a plan that on day one of his administration, if he does assume that position, the plan to allow the inclusion of men and boys who identify as female into spaces for women and girls. Chuck Schumer has also indicated his support for that as well. Meanwhile, as CNS News points out, the U.S. Supreme Court Monday of this week refused to take the case, which means that four justices denied for them to take the case. As a result, a lower court ruling stands, affirming the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals found that transgender students have the right. You have the right to use the bathroom or locker room that aligns with your gender identity. So if you feel, if you're male, you feel like a female today, you can use that locker room, shower, restroom, sports teams, etc. U.S. Supreme Court refusing to hear that case. The High Court made a declaration that Parents for Privacy versus Barr Attorney General et al. Would not be heard. And so that lower court case is standing. Meanwhile, Nickelodeon. How many of you just put your kids down in front of Nickelodeon? Nickelodeon is joining with one of its transgender actors to roll out a trans youth acting challenge for young people who identify as trans or non-binary and want to pursue an acting career. The network for children is working with actor Michael D. Cohen. Cohen said this, that the Michael D. Cohen Trans Youth Acting Challenge is open to any transgender or non-binary youth who love acting. Whatever talent your child has, we want to see them. And we need you to help them put together their audition tape. We're going to pick 12 submissions, and they'll be invited to participate in a very special Zoom acting masterclass with me. Well, after clarifying that only young U.S. or Canadian citizens who identify as transgender or non-binary are eligible, he said, I'm so excited to see these auditions. This is a dream come true for me, too. Now, suppose that they had acting saying, this is only for morally straight young people. If you're LGBT, you're not able to apply. You're not able to participate. Do you know how this would be the top story in every nightly newscast? Discrimination. But now it's okay for them to say that it's only for transgender or non-binary youth. They are the only ones eligible. Townhall.com, the Republican-led Senate Finance and Homeland Security Committee, published a new and lengthy report Tuesday evening further detailing national security concerns related to Hunter Biden's shady foreign dealings in China and Ukraine. The Senate Committee on Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs and the Senate Committee on Finance undertook this investigation into potential conflicts of interest and the involvement of the Biden family in foreign business ventures while Joe Biden was vice president, following allegations that the Obama administration's Ukraine policy could have been affected by Hunter Biden's position on the board of Burisma and that family members may have improperly sought to benefit from their relationship with the vice president. That's not some commentator. That's what the report says. The committee's found that the relationship between the Biden family through Hunter and the former Vice President Joe Biden's brother James is deeply connected to the Chinese Communist Party. We're going to be back with more on this here in just a moment. You're listening to Crosstalk on the VCY America Network. It's a day of news roundup. We'll be right back.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, scientist and creation researcher with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, when did the mammoths die?
Chris, the mammoths were thought to have died out about 10,000 years ago. And although evolutionists have admitted that early man must have seen the mammoths, more recent evidence has caused them much consternation. In the tomb of one of the pharaohs in Egypt is a drawing of men carrying ivory tusk on their shoulders. Next to them is an animal that sure looks like a mammoth, with hairy skin and a domed head, just like we see in mammoth fossils. And why not? Mammoths are a variety of the elephant kind, and two of them were on board Noah's Ark. Certainly humans knew of them, and from the earliest times have made use of their ivory. Chris, it's the back to Genesis view of history which makes sense out of the evidence.
To learn more about creation, get our free DVD called That's a Fact. Visit our web store at icr.org/store and use the promo code FACT at the checkout when ordering your That's a Fact DVD.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. We've got a news roundup day here today. Yes, the Senate committee dropped the news that there's a report on Hunter Biden, and it's alarming. Alarming connections to China. And then we also have, here's the New York Post, Joe Biden's son revealed Wednesday that he's under federal investigation for possible tax fraud. The probe also reportedly involves a laptop that belonged to Biden, Hunter Biden, the existence of which was first reported by the Post, and which contains communications and documents detailing some of the business dealings in China and Ukraine. Remember, social media said, we got to pull this. We suspended New York Post for a time because they reported this. And guess what? It's coming out. And there's some evidence behind all this coming up in the Senate committee. Now we have the possible tax fraud. A statement attributed to the Biden-Harris transition said, quote, President-elect Biden, this is a direct quote, President-elect Biden is deeply proud of his son, who has fought through difficult challenges, including the vicious personal attacks of recent months, only to emerge stronger. Let's get on to some election-related issues. Pennsylvania, this is from the Epoch Times. The Pennsylvania's House Speaker and Majority Leader yesterday, filed a brief, an amicus brief with the U.S. Supreme Court against the state of Pennsylvania. This is her House Speaker, against the state, in favor of the Texas lawsuit against the Commonwealth and three other states. However, the Attorney General of Pennsylvania, Josh Shapiro, is filing a brief arguing that Paxton's assertions are frivolous, an attempt to disenfranchise voters in the Commonwealth. Lots of states and congressmen have all signing on to the suit. Also, this is interesting, the Georgia suitcase election fraud suspects, they've been caught. They've been identified, and this is coming to us from, I believe it is Pamela Geller. Three suspects involved, identified as Ruby Freeman, her own daughter, and Ralph Jones Sr. Who is he? A spokesman for the Democratic U.S. Senate candidate Raphael Warnock's campaign. The third suspect in the Georgia suitcase scandal is also the same man who spread lies that the water main broke in the State Farm Center in the state of Georgia. Epoch Times also reporting that an election supervisor in Coffee County, Georgia, demonstrated in recent videos posted online how Dominion Voting Systems voting software allows votes to be changed through an adjudication process. The process allows the operator to add vote marks to the scanned ballot as well as invalidate vote marks already on the ballot. Adjudication should only serve to resolve issues of voters marking ballots incorrectly, such as filling the bubbles in a way that doesn't clearly show who he or she voted for, yet it appears a substantial number of ballots went through this adjudication process, at least in some Georgia counties. As the Coffee County Supervisor Misty Martin showed, the system can be set to allow adjudication of all scanned ballots, even blank ones, and effectively allow the operator to vote those ballots. The videos were posted by local news site Douglas Now, whose publisher Robert Preston told the Epoch Times that they were filmed this week in the local election office. According to our election folks, this Dominion system is flawed, not secure, open to manipulation if somebody were so inclined. It's not clear how many ballots were adjudicated statewide. The Office of Georgia Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger didn't respond to a request for comment. But in Fulton County, that includes Atlanta, over 100,006 ballots were adjudicated by November 4th. A statement from Richard Barron, the county's director of elections, during a November 4th press conference. Yeah, folks, grasp your arms around this one. That in total, they had more than 500,000 ballots cast in the county. 500,000. But at over 20% were adjudicated, where somebody had to go through and make markings on them. Why is 20%? 20% of the people just didn't get it and fill out their ballots right? Western Journal reporting, Arizona Republican Party Chairwoman Kelly Ward announced yesterday that she's appealing to the U.S. Supreme Court her federal case regarding alleged irregularities with the voting software used in November's election. On Wednesday, U.S. District Judge who was appointed in 2013 by Barack Obama, dismissed the case, which was launched by attorney Sidney Powell, but named Ward as a plaintiff. The lawsuit claims Dominion voting system machines connected to the Internet, which violates election laws, the Times reported. The case contest is contesting more than 412,000 of the votes cast. You know, it's terrible when we have to start putting legislation like this into the mix. There's a representative in Texas, Brian Babin, who has proposed the You Must Be Alive to Vote Act. It's a bill that's intended to crack down on alleged instances of people using names of the deceased in order to vote. The goal of the bill is to have states check the Social Security Administration death records and purge the deceased from voter rolls. Seems like a no-brainer, folks. Do we really need legislation that says you must be alive to vote? Western Journal reporting in an effort to cut down on avenues for voter fraud, a group of House Republicans have authored a bill to overturn the National Voter Registration Act of 1993. Legislation seeks to curtail some of the alleged fraud at what is as potential source. The 93 legislation, known as the Motor Voter Law, encourages Americans to register to vote when they apply for driver's licenses or while conducting other business with the government. GOP Representative Andy Biggs of Arizona is concerned that the motor voter law requires states to accept a signed form attesting that the voter is a U.S. citizen without any other proof. And how many states are now giving driver's licenses to illegal aliens? Newsmax.com reporting documents necessary to establish the chain of custody for more than 83% of the estimated 600,000 Georgia absentee ballots placed in drop boxes by voters and subsequently delivered to local election officials still have not been produced by state or county officials. That's as of yesterday. The story came out yesterday morning. The chain of custody missing for more than 83% of the estimated 600,000 absentee ballots. The Georgia Star News noted that the Georgia Election Code emergency rule mandates that every county is responsible for documenting the transfer of absentee ballots picked up at the drop boxes. The digital newspaper has sent out an open records request for the ballot transfer forms to 77 of Georgia's 159 counties. 10 counties told the newspaper they did not have drop boxes. 60 counties did not respond to the request. The newspaper said it appears that state officials do not plan to take any actions to avoid a repeat of the chain of custody questions for absentee ballots placed in the drop boxes ahead of the January 5th Senate runoff. Let's get on to COVID. Unbelievable issues today. Governor Jared Polis, this is Liberty Council, has finally dropped Colorado's COVID unconstitutional limits on religious gatherings and declared that houses of worship are essential and removed attendance caps on worship effective Monday, December 7th at 5 o'clock p.m. Mountain Time. Liberty Council had been litigating the attendance caps on worship in Colorado, and thankfully for their efforts and Liberty Council's work, the Colorado governor now has declared churches essential. But let's get over to the state of Virginia. This coming to us from WND.com. Democratic Virginia Governor Ralph Northam told Virginians yesterday that they don't need to be in church for God to hear their prayers. Well, we know that's true. We can pray at any time, no matter where we are. But he issued a new executive order yesterday expanding mask mandates, setting a curfew between midnight and 5 a.m. I don't know if the virus is more potent at 12:01 a.m. or not. Lowering the number of people at social gatherings to 10 or less people, the Washington Post reported. Measures going to effect at 12:01 a.m. Monday. Though these restrictions do not affect houses of worship, he urged those who wish to continue worshiping in person to stay home and practice recommended safety measures due to a rise in the coronavirus cases. Here's what he had to say.
Now I'd like to take a moment to talk about our faith communities. This is a holy time for multiple faith traditions. Tonight, as a matter of fact, is the first night of Hanukkah. Christmas is 2 weeks away. The holidays are typically times of joy and community. We gather together, we celebrate our faith, and we celebrate with family. But this year, we need to think about what is truly the most important thing. Is it the worship or the building? For me, God is wherever you are. You don't have to sit in the church pew for God to hear your prayers. So I strongly call on our faith leaders to lead the way and set an example for their members. Worship with a mask on is still worship. Worship outside or worship online is still worship.
You know, we still have the scripture that tells us to not forsake the assembling of ourselves together as the manner of some is, and so much the more as you see the day approaching. Very interesting, because we keep hearing about we need to lock down, we need to do this, we need to do that. A New American put out a story 2 days ago entitled Lockdown Failure in London, COVID-19 is Worse Than Before. In an attempt to slow a surge in the spread of COVID-19, British Prime Minister Boris Johnson ordered a second national lockdown for England on November 5th. That lockdown ended December 2nd and appears to have had little effect in London and in the UK's capital now because it has a higher rate of infection than before the lockdown. Figure that one out. According to Paul Hunter, a microbiologist and professor of health protection, there were more cases at the end of the lockdown than at the start of it in London. So now, just over a week removed from a draconian national lockdown, health officials are warning that London should begin bracing for Tier 3 restriction, which includes the closing now of bars, pubs, cafes, and restaurants except for takeout, banning all live events, and a prohibition against any mixing of households. Can't mix households, so basically another lockdown. The next tier review isn't scheduled until December 16th, with any new tier designations not set to take effect until December 19th. They just finished the lockdown, and they found they've got more cases after the lockdown than before the lockdown. Do the lockdowns work? LifeSiteNews.com, an FDA advisory panel voted 17-4 yesterday to recommend emergency use authorization of the Pfizer-BioNTech COVID-19 vaccine, favoring the opinion that the benefits of it outweigh its risk for use in individuals 16 years of age and older. Diana Zuckerman, president of the National Center for Health Research, stressed during the panel meeting that the EUA is not approval and should have more restrictions than you'd have for approval. The EUA, which would allow select groups of people to take the Pfizer vaccine before a months-long full approval process is completed, saying we need to long-term data to fully understand if the benefits outweigh the risk for frail patients, and for all races and ethnicities, and for all patients, said Zuckerman. Rosie Hassad, a professor at Mercy College with expertise in epidemiology, acknowledged that during Pfizer vaccine trials, there were frequent mild and moderate adverse effects, which are recognized as common side effects of vaccines. Ongoing monitoring of this vaccine is imperative, they said. Now, I think it's interesting that they're talking about the risk for frail patients. Now, in a short time, I've got one of these stories. In New York, they're going to start the vaccinations on those in nursing homes. Why would they do that? Very interesting indeed. Oh, yeah, here we go. From Fox 5 in New York, New York lawmakers. This is interesting. Tell you, I'm going to save that till right after the break because we're a short time away from that. This is interesting, though. A day after President Trump signed an executive order prioritizing Americans in the distribution of U.S. developed or funded coronavirus vaccines, senior U.N. leaders cautioned against vaccine nationalism, arguing that in a pandemic, no one is safe until everyone is safe. The order signed by President Trump Tuesday makes it a policy to ensure Americans have priority access. Once every American who wants a vaccine has received it, it's in the interest of the United States to facilitate international access to vaccines that have been developed in the U.S. or procured by the U.S. government. Friends, I'm going to be sharing some startling information here after the break. Stay with us. You're listening to Crosstalk on the VCY America Network.
High in the Swiss Alps, Lucian, a lonely, frightened 13-year-old, is overtaken by catastrophic events as he causes little Danny to fall off of a cliff. Lucian finds himself an outcast with his family, his school friends, and especially the very hostile Annette, the sister of Danny.
Danny, I told you not to talk to Lucian. He'll only hurt you again.
Bitterness and anger set in. As Lucian finds solitude in the nearby woods, He comes across a woodcarver who helps him find the peace he was looking for, that not only changes his life, but that of others as well.
You may be able to run away from the village, but you can't run away from yourself.
Treasures of the Snow quickly captures the heart. It's a story of friendship, forgiveness, and redemption. Treasures of the Snow is available on DVD for a donation of $16 or more by calling VCY America at 1-800-729-9829. That's 1-800-729-9829.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. Friends, I just have news I need to share with you. There are things you need to know about and be alerted to. The critical issues here as we're talking about coronavirus and where we are in this world today. Just this morning, as I was looking through some news, came across a story from the Christian Post, of which the headline caught my attention regarding John MacArthur at Grace Community Church. Listen to what the story says. Grace Community Church Pastor John MacArthur has warned that today's world is perfectly suited for the Antichrist to come amid the chaos and lawlessness stemming from the COVID-19 pandemic. MacArthur said on Sunday that world governments have done something that's never been done in human history by making the pandemic issue and the response global. Now we are a global world, and that is a setup that we've been waiting for through redemptive history since the Lord promised that he would come in the future. An Antichrist would have a global government. We literally have such power over people globally that we can shut them down so they can't function, he said. This suits the world of Antichrist. As you look at the book of Revelation, there's the mark of the beast, the number. And if you don't have that, you don't buy, you don't sell, you don't exist. Everything about you, they know, the people you have access to, all your data. They know all of it. You can go out of existence virtually in any moment, and somebody decides that. This is the kind of world that appears to be perfectly suited for the Antichrist to come, bring a certain amount of peace, and the world falls at his feet. MacArthur described the Antichrist as the instrument of Satan, adding, and of course, all hell breaks loose, and in that time of the Great Tribulation, God's judgment comes, at the end of which Christ returns. The Bible says in the end times will be lawlessness, and there is lawlessness today, and an escalating lawlessness, and an effort to create more lawlessness by taking restraints away, he said. This is a world that could find itself in such an absolute chaos that the right satanic leader who promises to fix everything could be given the title of King of the World. That Antichrist aided by the false prophet is what we see in the book of Revelation. We have the kind of weaponry that could destroy a third of the population, a fourth of the population, as you see in the book of Revelation. He said, I've been here 50 years and the church is 63 years old. The church has never had any kind of mandate from the government to close. So when they came up with this mandate, it seemed to be so rare and so unusual that we were listening. Upon hearing dire predictions about the death toll, MacArthur said it was enough to make anybody with common sense pause and take steps to ensure no one was endangered. The church finally initially moved to a live stream model and closed down in-person services, but within a few weeks, MacArthur said parishioners started showing up again. Despite facing the prospect of fines and the threat of jail time as a result of his refusal to comply with coronavirus regulations, MacArthur has maintained that it's the church's biblical responsibility to stay open and hold worship services. Of course, he said, my biblical hero apart from the Lord Jesus Christ is the Apostle Paul. And when he went into a town, he didn't ask what the hotel was like. He asked what the jail was like because he knew that's where he was going to spend some time. So I don't mind being a little apostolic. If they want to tuck me into a jail, I'm open for a jail ministry. I've done a lot of other ministries and haven't had the opportunity to do that one, so bring it on. Now, some folks would say that you're taking this really kind of afar, to think that you're going to have a mandate for this mark or for the Antichrist to come in global conditions. You already heard what I read from the UN about not having a vaccine nationalism coming from the United Nations. This came from CharismaNews.com. Researchers have found a way to leave a mark under the skin that will enable medical authorities to know whether someone has been vaccinated or not. This mark is created using a specialized dye that is not visible to the naked eye, and the dye is delivered under the skin as part of the vaccination process. MIT researchers have now developed a novel way to record a patient's vaccination history, storing the data in a pattern of dye invisible to the naked eye that's delivered under the skin at the same time as the vaccine. In areas where proper vaccination cards are often lost or do not exist at all and electronic databases are unheard of, this technology can enable the rapid and anonymous detection of patient vaccination history to ensure that every child is vaccinated, said Kevin McHugh, a former MIT postdoctoral student who's now an assistant professor of bioengineering at Rice University. The MIT article announcing this discovery states that this research has been funded by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and the Koch Institute Support Core Grant from the National Cancer Institute. In order to see the mark left by the specialized dye, authorities will need a specially equipped smartphone, and it's reported that the mark can be read for at least 5 years after the initial injection. Researchers designed their dye to be delivered by a micro-needle patch rather than a traditional syringe and needle. Such patches are now being developed to deliver vaccines for measles, rubella, and other diseases, and researchers showed that the dye could be easily incorporated into these patches. The micro-needles on each patch would consist of a mixture that includes dissolvable sugar, and once applied to human skin, they would partially dissolve, releasing their payload within about 2 minutes. By selectively loading microparticles into micro-needles, the patches deliver a pattern in the skin that's invisible to the naked eye, but can be scanned by a smartphone that has the infrared filter removed. Isn't that interesting? And now listen to this. From Fox 5 New York, the headline, New York legislation could make COVID-19 vaccination mandatory. A New York lawmaker has introduced a bill that would allow the state's Department of Health to require New Yorkers to get the COVID vaccine under certain circumstances. The lawmakers propose mandating vaccination against COVID-19 if not enough residents voluntarily get the shot once it's available. This is Assemblymember Linda Rosenthal introduced a bill that would require the state to safely and effectively distribute an FDA-approved vaccine in accordance with the Department of COVID-19 Vaccination Administration Program, according to the language of the legislation. Once the vaccination has been rolled out for a while, the Department on Health would have the authority to mandate vaccination to anyone who can safely receive the vaccine if public health officials see the New Yorkers aren't developing sufficient immunity from COVID-19. The bill does not define sufficient immunity, so presumably public health officials would have to set the benchmark. But Rosenthal said this: if less than 70% of the population voluntarily gets vaccinated, then the mandate should take effect. In other words, if less than 7 out of 10 people will take the vaccine, we need to make it mandatory. The State Department of Health would have the ability to say that more people have to get it, and they would set the rules, and they would set the structure. The bill would allow people to be medically exempt from this if they get a letter from a licensed medical doctor. But Cuomo has said that the first batches of Pfizer's vaccine, here we go, will go to the nursing homes for residents and staff next week. Then a batch of vaccine doses from Moderna will soon arrive thereafter. Friends, this is what's going out, this dictatorial rule. Dictatorial rule. I've got to see here. I've got a lengthy clip. And it looks like I'm not going to be able to air this until after the break. Friends, we're not going to be able to open phone lines today because I have a clip that I do want to air, and I don't have sufficient time between now and the break to air it. But it's of a Dr. Pierre Corey testified before a Senate committee on COVID this week. And you need to hear what he is pleading for those that were part of this. So I apologize. We're not going to be able to open phone lines today. I want you to hear that clip. Meanwhile, we have some other stories on COVID as well. This from WND.com. California sheriff criticized recent coronavirus regulations and vowed that his department would not be used as muscle to enforce the orders on the residents of his county. Riverside County Sheriff Chad Bianco spoke out in a video against Newsom's recent COVID-19 mandate that restricts businesses and residents to stay home if intensive care unit capacity drops below 15% in certain areas. The sheriff also lambasted state authorities who threatened to withhold state funding from counties that defiled virus regulations in early September. These closures and stay-at-home orders are flat-out ridiculous, he said in a video. The metrics used for closures are unbelievably faulty and are not representative of true numbers, and are disastrous for Riverside County. The Daily Signal said, here are politicians who refuse to stay home after telling you to do so. A plethora of elected lawmakers and executives have repeatedly urged citizens to stay home and away from their loved ones, even for the holidays, and then refused to stay home themselves. So the Daily Caller has put together a list of the biggest offenders. New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio visited his local YMCA hours before Cuomo shut down all gyms in the state. De Blasio's office said the mayor wished to visit the YMCA one more time before the shutdown. If it's so dangerous, stay away. Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot urged citizens to stay at home in accordance with COVID restrictions until she needed to get a haircut. Following massive backlash, she defended the haircut, saying, I'm the public face of the city, and you know, I'm a person who takes personal hygiene very seriously, and I felt like I needed to have a haircut, so I got a haircut. She's also urged citizens to cancel their Thanksgiving plans, though she was seen celebrating with large crowds after following news that Joe Biden won the presidential election. Nancy Pelosi, we've had that story on before, how though hair salons were shut down, she went in to get her hair done, didn't wear a mask for at least part of the appointment. Gavin Newsom, governor of California, photographed dining indoors at the Michelin-starred French Laundry on the evening of November 6 after urging California residents to wear a face mask in between bites. He later apologized, called the party a bad mistake. Philadelphia Mayor Jim Kenney photographed during indoors without a mask in Maryland in late August while indoor dining was prohibited in Philadelphia. Ralph Northam of Virginia, governor there, caught without a face mask at Virginia Beach in May while he was weighing a statewide order requiring citizens to wear a mask. We got the D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser traveled to Joe Biden's early November victory speech in high-risk Delaware, despite the D.C. Health Department travel requirements. She excused the trip by saying it was essential travel exempt under the D.C. restrictions. Senator Dianne Feinstein filmed chatting with her aides maskless in the corridors of a government building before entering a mid-November hearing. California state legislators as well. State lawmakers traveled to Hawaii in mid-November for the annual Independent Voter Project Conference, a trip that drew criticism from those who said lawmakers should not be at a resort amidst the rising coronavirus cases. Don't they have something about quarantine if you go into Hawaii from another state? We also have Williamson County Judge Bill Gravel from Texas pleaded guilty, fined $1,000 for violating the stay-at-home order that he enacted in April after he was caught on camera attending his grandson's birthday party. Denver Mayor Michael Hancock warned citizens to avoid travel in a tweet only 30 minutes before he boarded a plane to travel to his family for Thanksgiving. On and on this list goes. You can find it at dailysignal.com. From CNSNews.com. Of the 261,530 COVID-involved deaths recorded by NCHS as of December 9th, fewer than 1% involve people aged 34 or younger. That includes school-age children forced to learn remotely and college-age people who, along with the rest of us, are discouraged, in some cases barred by executive order from patronizing restaurants indoors. People ages 35 to 44, that includes prime working age people, account for 1.88% of COVID deaths so far. Interesting numbers. Again, that's at CNSNews.com. And even Fauci himself has admitted widely used COVID test picks up harmless dead virus. It's a resurfaced video that the PCR test pick up harmless fragments of the coronavirus, resulting in many false positive cases that result in overstating the threat. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going right to this audio clip from a Dr. Pierre Corey as he testified before a Senate committee this week. He's from Milwaukee and begging the National Institute of Health to review his study of ivermectin. It's a drug that's been used for decades and used to treat parasites. He's calling it a miracle drug. He said, let us use it. You're going to hear this clip after the break. You're listening to Crosstalk.
For the Worldview Report, I'm Brandon House. Our website is worldviewreport.com. The other night, we broke on our live national television show the story of Mary Fanning and Alan Jones. They are national security authors and researchers, and they're reporting from firsthand knowledge that Fox News knew about the Hammer and Scorecard software that could be used to steal an election. Well, reportedly, Fox News knew about this as far back as 2013. They report that Carl Cameron actually went and traveled and met with the man who wrote the software, Dennis Montgomery, spent a week with a film crew filming his computer as he demonstrated how an election could be stolen. Why has Fox News said on this since 2013, according to their report? Does this help us understand why Fox News flipped on the night of the election? Or did they just publicly flip? Maybe they flipped a long time ago. For the Worldview Report, I'm Brandon House.
This is Crosstalk on VCY America, and it's the reason I'm not opening phone calls, phone lines here today. I want you to hear this clip from Dr. Pierre Corey. He's talking about ivermectin. It's proving to be a wonder drug, not approved for the treatment of COVID, but should be. He's a pulmonologist. He told a hearing of the Senate Homeland Security Committee Tuesday, a very impassioned presentation. He's a physician at Aurora St. Luke's Medical Center in Milwaukee. He begged the National Institutes of Health to review his study of ivermectin. That's a drug that's been around for decades and used to treat parasites. You're not going to hear this from other sources. That's why we wanted to bring it to you here today so you can hear what is going on. Another doctor pleading, let us use this. Here's his testimony.
In the last 9 months, in our review of all of the literature as a group, again, we are some of the most highly published physicians in our specialty and the world. We have done nothing but try to figure out how to identify a repurposed and available drug to treat this illness. We have now come to the conclusion after 9 months, and I have to point out, I am severely troubled by the fact that the NIH, the FDA, and the CDC, I do not know of any task force that was assigned or compiled to review repurposed drugs in an attempt to treat this disease. Everything has been about novel and or expensive pharmaceutically engineered drugs, things like tocilizumab and remdesivir and monoclonal antibodies and vaccines. We have 100 years of medicine development. We know we are expert in all the medicines we use, and I do not know of a task force that has been focused on repurposed drugs. I will tell you that my group and our organization, I will say that we have filled that void. That is all we have done is focus on the things we know and things we do. And I'm here to tell you, Dr. Ryder, he just presented. He has one study of the many that I want to talk about. And I want to talk about that we have a solution to this crisis. There is a drug that is proving to be of miraculous impact. And when I say miracle, I do not use that term lightly. And I don't want to be sensationalized when I say that. That is a scientific recommendation based on mountains of data that has emerged in the last 3 months. When I am told, and I just had to hear this in the opening sentence, that we are touting things that are not FDA or NIH recommended, let me be clear. The NIH, their recommendation on ivermectin, which is to not use it outside of controlled trials, is from August 27th. We are now in December. This is 3 to 4 months later. Mountains of data have emerged from many centers and countries around the world showing the miraculous effectiveness of ivermectin. It basically obliterates transmission of this virus. If you take it, you will not get sick. I want to briefly summarize the data. My manuscript, again, published by some of the most, we have contributed more to the medical knowledge of our specialty in our careers than anyone else can claim as a group. And our manuscript, which was posted on Medicine Preprint Server, details all of this evidence. I want to briefly summarize it. Number one, we have evidence that ivermectin is effective not only in prophylaxis, in the prevention. If you take it, you will not get sick. We just came across a trial last night from Argentina by the lead investigator of ivermectin in Argentina, Dr. Hector Carvalho. They prophylaxed 800 healthcare workers. not one got sick. In the 400 that they didn't prophylax with ivermectin, 58% got sick. 237 of those 400 got sick. If you take it, you will not get sick. It has immense and potent antiviral activity. We know that from the first study in Monash. It has made the bench to the bedside. Prophylaxis, we now have four large randomized controlled trials totaling over 1,500 patients, each trial showing that as a prophylaxis agent, it is immensely effective. You will not get sick. You will be protected from getting ill if you take it. In early outpatient treatment, we have three randomized controlled trials and multiple observation as well as case series showing that if you take ivermectin, the need for hospitalization and death will decrease. The most profound evidence we have is in the hospitalized patients. We have four randomized controlled trials there, multiple observation trials, all showing the same thing. You will not die, or you will die at much, much, much lower rates. Statistically significant, large magnitude results if you take ivermectin. It is proving to be a wonder drug. It has already won the Nobel Prize in Medicine in 2015 for its impacts on global health in the eradication of parasitic diseases. It is proving to be an immensely powerful antiviral and anti-inflammatory agent. It is critical for its use in this disease. We, again, stand by our manuscript. It is a scientific manuscript. It's been submitted for peer review. But please recognize, peer review takes time. It takes months. We do not have months. We have 100,000 patients in the hospital right now dying. I'm a lung specialist. I'm an ICU specialist. I've cared for more dying COVID patients than anyone can imagine. They're dying because they can't breathe. They can't breathe. They're on high flow oxygen delivery devices. They're on non-invasive ventilators and or they're sedated and paralyzed and attached to mechanical ventilators that breathe for them. And I watch them every day. They die. By the time they get me in the ICU, they're already dying. They're almost impossible to recover. Early treatment is key. We need to offload the hospitals. We are tired. I can't keep doing this. If you look at my manuscript, and if I have to go back to work next week, any further deaths are going to be needless deaths, and I cannot be traumatized by that. I cannot keep caring for patients when I know that they could have been saved with earlier treatment, and that drug that will treat them and prevent the hospitalization is ivermectin. I am here today. I'm calling to action. The NIH, their last recommendation was August 27th. August 27th. I want to be clear. I am not here as a politician or a dramatist or sensationalizing what I'm recommending. I am going to be very clear and very simple. All I ask is for the NIH to review our data that we've compiled of all of the emerging data. We have almost 30 studies. Everyone is reliably and reproducibly positive, showing the dramatic impacts of ivermectin. Please, I'm just asking that they review our manuscript.
This was given before the Senate Homeland Security Committee Tuesday of this week. You hear the passion pleading. He said, I'm not just a random doctor. I'm just asking, review our data. And you had a group of some six doctors, prominent physicians, calling for the removal of obstacles to outpatient therapies for COVID-19 that they contend are saving lives. Why is it that these billions of dollars are spent on trying to find a cure when Dr. Corey and others are saying, we have got it here, we can save lives if only you will authorize us to use this? He is saying, check our data, review our data. Friends, thanks for joining us here today. Important information. Let's stay in prayer for our nation in such a time as this.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208, or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.